You are listening to the Revolution Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Wright, co-author at scdlifestyle.com. And this show is created by you and for you, but it comes to you via 14.4.me. So if you haven't heard of 14.4.me, this is Chris's new program that he's put together that can really help jumpstart your new year into a new healthy lifestyle. So it's a 14-day reset program. And so, you know, if you've been following this podcast for a while, you know that sleep, diet, exercise, and stress are things that we talk about on a regular basis. And what Chris has done is he knows, based on the questions that you submit and all the comments on his website, that it's sometimes really hard to integrate all of these at the same time. And so he created a step-by-step program that also walks you day by day over 14 days where you really begin to integrate these habits. And so when you exit the 14-day reset, you're going to be all set up with new sleep patterns, a diet cleansing, stress reduction, and new movement plans. So if you haven't checked out 14.4.me, go over there right now, give it a look-see. It's a great new program, and it's a really interesting idea if you haven't found the one thing that you're going to do in January here. So Chris, thank you so much for creating 14.4, and welcome to the show.
All right. Good to be here, Steve. I guess this one will be coming out after Christmas, so hope and the holiday season, and maybe just before the new year. So hope everyone had a good holiday season and is looking forward to 2015. How about you, Steve?
I would agree with that. I hope everybody had a very happy holidays, whichever you celebrate, and everybody's looking forward to a great new year, because I know I am.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we have a good question today. We're just going to talk a little bit about the 80-20 rule. That's what the question is about, and it's one of my favorite topics. So let's give it a listen, and we'll go from there.
Hi, Chris. Love the podcast. I've got a quick question about the 80-20 rule. I tried the 30-day reset as per your book, and due to family commitments and the meals they were eating, and also traveling, it didn't work out, and after about a week, it all went wrong. I mean, generally, I have been trying to eat a mainly sort of paleo diet. Whether I get to 80-20 or not, it may well be more like, 70-30 or something like that. I just wondered, generally, is there any research or what's your opinion on the fact if someone's generally in the heading in the right direction, but, you know, also eating maybe stuff they shouldn't every so often, beer, pizza, porridge, whatever, is the fact that they're generally in the right direction a positive, or is it potentially a bad combination to be eating a high-fat paleo diet with a load of stuff they probably shouldn't from a Western-type diet? Just wondered if you had any thoughts on that. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, thanks for sending that in, Chris. It's a question we get in some form or another pretty regularly. So I want to not only answer your question, but also kind of expand the answer to talk a little bit in general about the 80-20 rule for those that aren't familiar with it. And then just some thoughts that I've had over the years about the 80-20 rule and how to put it into practice and what some caveats are and things you might want to consider in relationship to it. So,
hey Chris, before you get started here, I just want to remind the listeners that you can be featured on this podcast as well. You can get your question answered. All you have to do is go to chriskresser.com/podcast question and go ahead and submit your question. And that's how we do these shows. So,
and you can take over the podcast for an episode. Okay, so 80-20 rule, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it. It's not something that I made up. It's used in a lot of different disciplines, not just diet. It's used in the productivity world. The concept is that that if you follow an approach for 80% of the time, that you'll get the majority of the results you're going to get from it. And the remaining 20% is often not worth the additional effort. Or put a different way, you may say in pursuing that additional 20%, you may have to make sacrifices in other parts of your life that sort of you know, make the results that you get from that additional 20% less valuable or take away from them in some way.
Yeah, there's a law of diminishing returns, potentially.
Law of diminishing returns, absolutely. So I talked about this in my book, and I've been an advocate of this for a long time in terms of diet, because I think there's more to life than food. And I think our other things affect how we even process the food that we eat, like stress levels and our sense of pleasure and joy and fun and social belonging and connections with other people. And so if sticking to a diet 100% of the time means that you're completely socially isolated, you don't go out with your friends anymore, you can't travel, you just basically stay at home and cook all of your meals all of the time, then we have to ask the question, like, is the benefit that you get from making that choice really worth what you're giving up in that situation? Because those things that you're giving up aren't just kind of fluffy things, you know, things that are nice to have in life. There are studies that actually show that they directly contribute to our health and well-being. And in fact, I talked about a study in my book that showed that social connection is a greater predictor of lifespan than even things like smoking cigarettes 15 times a day or 15 cigarettes a day. So,
wow, they measured it to 15?
Yeah. In other words, lack of social connection was a greater predictor of early death than smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Well, that really only makes sense. You know, I was actually having this conversation with a friend recently that, if you look at some of the Blue Zone studies, the book, The Blue Zones, my takeaway from that book was essentially that, you know, 100 years ago, we were still really good friends with our neighbors. And basically, every night, we would hang out with the people around us. And it was an open door policy where we socially connected every day.
Absolutely. And, you know, many people lived with in extended family arrangements with their parents and even grandparents. Now, of course, some of us might not think that that is desirable at this point, but it had its pluses and minuses then, and as I'm sure it would now. But the point, as you mentioned, Steve, is human beings lived in a tribal manner for, you know, all the entire evolution of human history. And that's only really changed in the past 100 years and even more pronounced in the last 50 to 75 years in the U.S. In many parts of the world, people still do live that way. So we're only talking about one part of the world, and we're only talking about the last 100 years when that shifted. So, I mean, we're getting a little off track here, but I think it's a really good point. And it just goes to show that things like that actually can directly affect our experience of life. They can directly affect the way that we digest and process food. I'm sure people have had the experience of eating when they're in a really stressed out place or when they're really feeling a lot of fear or they're feeling isolated or alone. They might, you know, eat a certain food that they digest pretty well in other circumstances, but when they're feeling that way, they don't digest it well at all. So we need to remember that there are other things that are important to focus on in life than just diet. And that's really part of, you know, like a big piece of the context around the 80-20 rule is that in some cases, but not all cases, pursuing that extra 20% leads to sacrifices made in these other areas that can actually have a greater impact on your overall health and well-being. So that's the general gist of the 80-20 rule. I do want to mention a few kind of caveats and things to consider. First of all, there's nothing magical about 80 or 20 as numbers. It's just a kind of rough guideline and it's a way of talking about it. In reality, it could be 85-15, it could be 90-10, it could be 95-5, it could be 75-25. You know, everyone has to find what their own unique ratio is or relationship is between the amount of effort they put into maintaining a clean diet and the payoff that they get from that. And then maintaining social connections and, you know, having a freedom to go off the reservation every now and then, eating mom's home cooked, whatever it is that, so, you know, really brings you a lot of pleasure, taking a trip, you know, going to a third world country or somewhere where they're not necessarily going to have, you know, the kinds of foods that you eat somewhere else, and just being free to eat those foods as part of the experience that you have. I mean, these are all things that make life richer and more full, but the thing that determines where you fall exactly on that 80-20, you know, 90-10, 95-5 ratio is, well, one of them is your current health status. So, for example, if you're relatively well and you don't have any major health concerns and you're not intolerant to any particular foods, which I'll come back to in a second, then 80-20 might be a good ratio for you. I mean, that's generally a good guideline for people. If you follow a paleo template type of diet, you know, for 80% of the time, and then 20% of the time, maybe you bring in some dairy or legumes or other foods like that. Or maybe you go even a little further off the reservation during some of that 20%. If you take a trip or you're out at a restaurant or you just feel like having a, you know, like a kind of Sunday dinner ritual where you eat something that you wouldn't normally eat. I mean, these are all things that I don't think are really going to interfere with your health if you're healthy overall, and in fact, could even enhance your health. But if you are, you know, under treatment, for example, for a condition like SIBO or intestinal permeability, leaky gut, or you're dealing with autoimmune disease, or you're dealing with any kind of chronic illness situation, oftentimes you'll probably need to stay closer to 100%, at least during the period of time where you're trying to address something therapeutically, or maybe it's more like 95-5. So that's one thing, is your health status, you know, and what your goals are. Well, maybe what your goals are would be a second thing. So if you're training for a competition, or you're really trying to increase your performance and squeak every last bit of performance that you can out of your diet and lifestyle, then of course maybe something more like 95-5 would be a better fit for you. Or let's say you just got out of law school and you're studying for the bar. You know, in that situation, you probably wouldn't want to really like elevate your game to the highest possible level. So you're going to want to stay more like 95-5 at that point, if you feel like that really helps you to maintain the mental clarity you need to do well on the test. So what your goals are, that's another important consideration. A third consideration would be if you have any food intolerances or allergies. So let's say you're gluten intolerant and you have celiac or non-celiac gluten sensitivity. You can still do an 80-20 rule, but gluten is not going to be part of that 20%, right? You're not going to, like, for your kind of day off where you're cutting loose and relaxing, it's a bad idea to go out and have beer and pizza, because the repercussions of that are just going to be so dramatic and long lasting that it's not worth that. The suffering that you're going to cause is not going to be worth the whatever social connection and sense of pleasure and joy you got out of going out for pizza and beer. So your particular sensitivities matter in terms of the 80-20 rule. And I often tell patients that, you know, when I do gluten intolerance testing or other food intolerance testing and it comes back positive, I say, you know, this means that it doesn't mean you can't do an 80-20 rule, but it means that gluten and wheat and gluten-containing foods are not going to be part of that, because it's just not worth the physiological damage that can cause. So those are probably the main considerations in terms of not only what that particular ratio is with the 80-20 rule, but also what foods might be included or excluded during the 80-20 rule.
So, yeah, so I think that's a big point to make there, which is that you mentioned a few times earlier that, you know, part of your 20% or your 5% or whatever might be going out to a restaurant. And so, you know, you might just decide to order something and not specify the exact oil and not, you know, get the veggies sauteed on the certain part of the grill and things like that, or not the grill, but the pan or whatever. Not 20% or whatever, that other percent doesn't always mean cookies, cake, ice cream, beer, and pizza.
Donuts and cheese doodles and super big gulps. But you know what? I rarely even have to say that, because once people start a paleo type of diet and stick with it for a little while, they don't feel good when they eat that stuff. You know, like they don't even want. It only takes a couple times usually for them to go, oh, I'm going to have a donut, you know, or I'm going to have a big gulp or something. And just to sort of, because they, to prove that they can, right? And then they do it and they're like, wait, this makes me feel terrible. I don't want to have this at all. And in fact, that's true for a lot of foods that aren't even necessarily that unhealthy. You know, I've often had the experience where patients will tell me, oh, you know, I had this meal that I used to just completely love. And I just, you know, it just tasted way too sweet, or, you know, if it was a dessert, or I woke up the next day and I didn't feel terrible, but I just didn't feel great. And I missed the mental clarity and other things. And, you know, they might choose to do it again in the future if they were out socially or whatever, but it's not, you know, this real push-pull relationship that a lot of people have initially with food. Once you get on a really clean diet and you're not telling yourself that you can't have something all the time, I mean, this is another interesting thing about the 80-20 rule, and it's very important psychologically. Most human beings, in my experience, don't like to be told what to do, even if it's themselves telling themselves what to do, right? As soon as you create a rule, there's a kind of almost natural impulse to break that rule. So if you say, I'm never going to eat a donut again, you know, most people will just never stop thinking about donuts, you know, and then they'll have this like really unhealthy relationship with it. So it's the part of the thinking behind the 80-20 rule is, you know, with the exception of food intolerances that I mentioned before, you say to yourself, you know, I could have a donut and a big gulp and cheese doodles as part of my 20% if I wanted to, but I don't really want to, so I'm not going to have it. And that's the way it usually happens, you know, in my experience, Steve, working with patients.
Yeah, it's like reframing it from set rules to choices. So like if it's kind of like parenting your inner child. Like if you tell children, you know, don't touch that, the first thing they pretty much do is touch that, because it just...
Oh yeah, anyone with a toddler knows that.
You know, that's just how we work. But yeah, if you kind of start thinking about, you know, I choose something else because that makes me feel better, or whatever reason you want to put behind it, but you just look at everything as choices rather than rules, then you can also get rid of any guilt if you do choose the donut and you feel really bad the next day.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it seems almost like it's so transparent that it wouldn't work, but it actually does work for even when you know the psychological principle behind it still works. So back to Chris's question. I mean, his question is slightly different. I mean, it involves the 80-20 rule, but his particular question is, so we have research that like a higher fat diet with lower carbohydrate intake isn't necessarily harmful. So if you're eating like a paleo diet with, you know, natural real food carbs like sweet potatoes, it's still going to be relatively low carbohydrate compared to a standard American diet. But what if you're eating a really high fat diet and then also eating a lot of processed and refined carbohydrates? I mean, there's definitely some research that suggests that that's probably not a good combination. And that's, you know, one of the problems with the standard American diet is the combination of the high fat plus the, you know, oxidized rancid fats and the highly refined processed carbohydrates like flour and excess sugar and stuff. And you put that all together and it's a really bad mix. But I think that's a little bit different. It's a little bit different to say that, you know, what the effects of a standard American diet with really high fat intake are versus like eating paleo 70% of the time and then 30% of the time eating a standard American diet. I still think someone's going to be better off doing that. You know, if you compare like eating standard American diet 100% of the time versus eating paleo 70% of the time and standard American 30, I mean, it's pretty obvious that that's going to be better, right? Now, we could also say that eating a paleo diet 100% of the time is probably going to be healthier than eating, you know, 70-30, especially if you're really going off the reservation during that 30%, like eating pizza and, you know, donuts and swaggy desserts and stuff like that. But, you know, people get to, there's a lot of different paths to the top of the mountain. And in the paleo world, the 30-day challenge or something like the 14-4 are very popular, where you just like, you know, hit it hard. Like, I mean, there might be a ramp up period like in the 14-4. That's one of the reasons I designed it the way that I did. There's a 2-week lead-in period Whereas with a lot of the 30-day challenges, it's just like, you know, one day you're on your old diet, and the next day you're starting the full paleo thing. Those are helpful, and they work well because they really help hit the reset button. So, you know, if you're not feeling well and you switch to like 30 days of paleo or 14 days of paleo, in most cases, you're going to have an amazing response. You're really going to feel different. And then that energy that comes from that and the feel and the change in how you feel provide the motivation and encouragement for you to continue to do that over a longer term period. And that's why so many people recommend that as a starting place. But that's not necessarily going to work for everybody. You know, different people have different ways of making changes. So sometimes, you know, as with happened with Chris, you start with those kinds of intentions, but then life gets in the way and somehow, and you end up only doing it 70% of the time. I still think that's great. But what I would encourage you to do is keep going and get to that 100% and maintain that for at least 14 days and preferably 30 days to really see how you feel when you do it 100%. I think everyone needs to have that experience at one point, and then they can decide whether how they feel is worth the effort that it takes to maintain that 100%, or if they can slip down to maybe 90% and maintain, you know, 99% of how they feel, then it may make sense to go down to 90-10, or, you know, and maybe if they slip down to 80% and they maintain 95% of how they feel, you know, that's the whole calculation. But you can't know that until you've had that experience of doing it 100% and seeing where it gets you. So whether you get there by doing it cold turkey and just starting, or whether you kind of take a more circuitous path to get there, the important thing, I think, is that you do get there, because there's no way to know what your personal 80-20 ratio will be unless you've had that 100% experience.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you made that point, because that was something that I was going to try to make if you didn't, which is that I think a lot of people, when they start this path, they're a little scared by going full 100%. But the reality is like, for instance, in my journey, I had no idea how good I could feel. And humans have like this ability to adapt to every level of health really quickly. And so if you don't spend 30 minutes or not 30 minutes, if you don't spend 30 days or so, like full 100% in, there's no way that you could ever know exactly how good you could feel. And so with the 80-20, the biggest mistake I see is people never actually try full on. They just say, oh, paleo's great. Or, oh, this real food diet's great. Well, I'll do 80-20. That fits, you know, that's way easier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And the point about how adaptable we are is a good one. I know we've talked about that before. That's an evolutionary mechanism that's helped us survive some pretty challenging circumstances. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. But the bad part of it is that we can really settle for less than we should, because we just get used to feeling a certain way, and we see around us, hey, most people seem to feel about this way too, so maybe this is just how it is, you know, maybe. And there's that whole meme and mentality about around aging is that way, you know. It's like, oh, I'm 50 now, so I should be having a bad back, and I should, you know, be feeling tired all the time, and, you know, I should, yeah, everyone starts to gain weight at this point, you know. So there's this whole kind of cultural acceptance of that we have to work with. But yeah, you know, just to repeat that, it's doesn't matter how you get there so much. Just get there, spend those 30 days, and then you can work backwards from there. And I think once you do that, you'll have a much clearer sense too going forward of more confidence in your approach. Like, a lot of people before they do that are really confused by everything that they're reading and what they're doing, and then they're not really clear on how strict they need to be. And part of that is because they've never done that full 30 days. Now, in some cases, people will do the full 30 days and they'll find that they don't feel that much different than they felt before. And then it's certainly not worth, you know, the struggle necessarily to maintain that 100% in that case. But what's often needed there is there may be something going on that's not necessarily solvable by just through diet. So in that situation, you may need to find a functional medicine practitioner do some testing, see if you've got SIBO, gut issues, you know, any other condition that may require not only, you know, specific changes in diet that go above and beyond just the 30-day paleo, you know, strict paleo approach, but may also require specific lab testing and supplements, you know, herbs, and maybe even medications in some cases to resolve the problem. Because diet is really important, but it's not the only thing. And I'm often having to remind my patients, you know, when I see someone who comes to me and they're extremely sick and they've already done tons and tons of diet experimentation, which is often true in my patients by the time they get to me. And one of the first questions they ask is, what should I eat? And I often say, well, just, you know, continue what you're doing now, what you figured out that works for you now in this place is probably fine. The big change you're going to get is not likely going to come from, you know, just tweaking one little thing in your diet here or there. It's going to come from us dealing with the SIBO that we now know that you have, and the impaired methylation that we now know that you have, and the severe adrenal fatigue that we know that you have. You know, so addressing all of these things is what's going to really bring you forward quickly. It's not, you know, making one tiny little tweak in the diet that you haven't done yet that's going to make the big difference. And in fact, addressing all these other problems is going to expand the range of foods that you're able to tolerate going forward. So that's not necessarily directly related to the 80-20 rule, but it is indirectly in that sometimes making adjustments outside of diet, like we talked about earlier in the show, is really what's necessary to take the next step forward in health.
Yeah, it kind of circles back to your point about what's your current health status. If your current health status is much lower, then diet's important. But typically, if you're trying to move up that ladder quite a bit, then once you get a semi-good grip on what your diet is, what works for you, then you have to, you know, 80-20 your time towards something else, actually.
Yeah, so I realize we might have confused people. I want to be clear, because earlier I said if your health status is low, you might need to be closer to 100%. That only goes for people who haven't yet tried that. But if you've already tried 100% and it didn't really help you, and you kind of then maybe settling back down to 80 or 90, like Steve was saying, and then, you know, focusing your energy on looking at other potential causes that could be getting in the way of you feeling better would be a better use of that energy. So hopefully that distinction is clear.
Awesome. Well, I think this is going to help a lot of people as they come out of the holidays or as they are going through the holidays. And thanks, Chris, for putting all the time in this year. It's been a great 2014.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Steve, for your presence and support. And everybody, we wish you a joyful and successful 2015.
Yes. And in between shows, if you're wondering, you know, what's Chris researching, what's he looking at, what's the new studies that are coming out, make sure you're following him on social media, because that's where he's typically releasing the latest and greatest things that he's looking at. So go to facebook.com/ChrisKresser LAC and twitter.com/ChrisKresser. And just one more reminder, you know, this podcast is generated from your questions. So we need you to go to ChrisKresser.com/podcast question and send us what you'd like us to talk about.
Hey, Steve, there's one more thing. I always forget because we record these episodes in advance. So on December 30th, I'm not sure when this is going to be published exactly, but on December 30th, the paperback version of my book, Your Personal Paleo Code, which was the name in hardcover, is being published, and it's been renamed The Paleo Cure. Same book, and if you didn't get it in hardcover, make sure to check it out in paperback. It's a great resource for people who are interested in using the paleo diet and lifestyle or customized, personalized version of it to heal chronic illness and recover their health and vitality. So it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the typical places.
Yeah, so if you don't have Chris's book, you can either get the Personal Paleo Code or the Paleo Cure. So go pick that up, because it's definitely going to help you with everything that we're talking about on the podcast here. It's the foundation that we don't mention all the time.
All right, everybody. Take care. See you next time.